So the support, what we got going on here, Ellie, when she called me, I was really stunned because I don't feel like I'm way up here to be here, but I'm willing to help whatever way I can help. And I told Ellie that. I said, I don't mind speaking because I've been doing it. Whatever I can do to help someone that's in there, over there, going through. Because I talked to a lot of people when I got back from Desert Storm. You got a lot of people that's scared. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn. They scared if they go this way, they'll get in trouble with their union that they in. If they go to this way, they don't know if they're going to lose their wife, their kids, their home, their jobs. I was speaking at one engagement. This police officer lost everything. His wife, his home, he had to move back home with his family because of the sickness that he got over there. But we just need to just remember that whatever we see with the natural eye is not always true. You need to really look at behind the scenes. Talk to the veterans. Talk to people that's been went through this. Talk to the families. Don't lose any contact with people. I really support the veterans. I'm a veteran, and I'm glad to be a veteran. But sometimes we get deceived. So if I can say anything, I would ask that you really support whatever way you can, the veterans that's over there now, even when they return, the families of the ones that have lost family members there. And I just pray that whatever happens, happens for a good cause and not a bad cause. Because it's a really sad thing to turn on your TV and see innocent people getting killed for a reason that I feel should never take place. It's many ways of dealing with things, and I never thought war was one of them. We sign up, we don't sign up to be intended to go into war. You sign up because you want to be part of the country. You really want to do something for the country you live in, but that don't have to be war. When I signed on the dotted line, I never thought I'd be in a war. When I came back, I really thought that my government was behind me. I went through a lot. I carried my family through a lot. But my wife and my kids stood by me. Through it all. And if she had left me, I wouldn't have mattered because I knew what I was putting her through. And all because the country that I was trying to defend didn't try to defend me. They put the commercials on the television. You believe them. Look deeper. Look behind the scene. And just remember that what you see on our side is not necessarily what's going on. Thank you for this time.
You're listening to excerpts from a forum, Vets Speak Out, Depleted Uranium and the Gulf War Syndrome. This is Unwelcome Guests. You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner, Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio at 88.1 FM, or Free Radio Santa Cruz. We continue with a conclusion of the forum.
Thank you, Alan. Our next speaker is Dana Briggs. Quite a different experience. Dana is an Air Force Academy graduate. He's served in other places in different parts of the world, Europe, Middle East, Central America, United States, 1978 to 1988. He's a member of Veterans for Peace and Amnesty International. Welcome, Dana.
Good evening, everybody. It's an honor to be up here with these veterans, with all the veterans that are sitting out in the audience, and for all of you that decided to take your time to come out this evening and listen to us and to the other speakers. Can you hear me now? Yes, my experience was somewhat different from most people's. I grew up in a military family during the time of John Wayne movies and just wars like World War II. My father was a retired Marine Corps Sergeant Major who fought in World War II, Korea, and nearly part of Vietnam. My mother was a Korean War veteran. My younger brother subsequently became a Gulf War veteran, the first Gulf War, in naval aviation. And the expectation was that I would follow in the family business. I did my job so well that in 1974 I had appointments to all five military academies, West Point, Annapolis, Air Force, Merchant Marine, and the Coast Guard. Decided to choose the Air Force because at the time, being a young, impressionable 19-year-old, I thought it was the better deal. And when I went into the academy with a lot of expectations, and having been weeded through literally thousands of people who were supposed to go to these things, I started a 4-year odyssey at that point to become a professional warrior. Ultimately, the thing that you need to understand about this military and any other military, and what 4 years of my training and then 10 years of active duty after that boils down to, is one simple sentence. All militaries exist to kill and destroy. Period. There is no other reason for a military to exist. During the time that I was a cadet, we were taught an honor code that's basically stated, I will not lie or cheat, nor steal, nor tolerate those among us who do. My expectation was, coming out of the academy in 1978, is that if I had to live up to an honor code as part of a professional warrior class, that those who would ask me to go and put my life on the line to protect everybody else would also live by the same honor code. In reality, what I found out was most of the people who ask you to put your butt and your life on the line lie, cheat, and steal. And they tolerate those who do. We went through a lot of training during that time, and another oath that we took upon commissioning in 1978 was, among other things, as a young officer, that I would support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Foreign and domestic. The interesting thing is that I never took an oath to defend the credibility of any president of the United States. During the 10 years that I was on active duty, which, as Ellen mentioned, ranged from Europe to the Middle East to Central America, yes, I was in combat. I was in combat in things that people generally don't know about except in rumors that to this day I can't, in all honesty, talk about in detail. But there's things that you need to know about combat, and it doesn't matter whether it's the current conflict or whether it's ones of the past. These are not video games. These are not John Wayne movies. And the closest thing that you will come to seeing something is probably Saving Private Ryan with one major part missing. There is a stench to war, a smell to war, whether it is exploding ordnance, oil wells on fire, or rotting bodies on the battlefield. It is something that you, I hope, will never have to experience, and it's things that people who do never forget. Among many other things that we were taught about was what the rules of the game were. And the rules of the game, believe it or not, are embodied in international law with things such as the Geneva Conventions, the Constitution, and military law. My estimation is that this current conflict is nothing new. It didn't just spring out of, to put it politely, the misguided attempts of the current administration. What this is a long, continuing series of violations of international law, our own domestic laws, and the laws of whichever deity that you may happen to bow to. They go clear back prior to World War II. Every president since World War II, including FDR, is, in my estimation, and I'm just one citizen, guilty of a war crime in one form or another. When I went to my last duty assignment as the Chief Communications War Planner and Exercise Designer at the tender rank of a senior captain, in my early 30s at United States Space Command in NORAD in Colorado Springs, with all the things that I had seen, and probably the straw that broke the camel's back was sitting in more exercises inside of Cheyenne Mountain at 3 o'clock in the morning and discussing the potential ramifications of what I consider to have been the greatest act of terrorism ever perpetrated upon the human race, which was 50 plus years of the Cold War with a nuclear threat hanging over our heads. And one of the discussions we had was what were acceptable losses in the nuclear strike scenario? What was the collateral damage that would be acceptable? And depending upon the scenario, acceptable losses were considered to be 20 to 80 million people. For me, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, plus the Reagan administration. And I resigned my commission in 1988. In the 15 years since then, I have been appalled and outraged at what I consider to be the dereliction of the leadership of this country when it comes to how they take care of individuals such as Alvin and the other two that are sitting up here, and those of you that have been out in the audience that were veterans. I have been appalled that even though I know that the Geneva Conventions say that we're not supposed to parade POWs in front of the TV, and there's arguments back and forth whether the picture should be put in the newspapers, regardless of whether they are Iraqi or U.S., that every one of us that has been alive since 1941 has, in fact, been a prisoner of war. Every one of us. This country has been on a continuous series of conflicts, which for the most part have been for absolutely no valid reason whatsoever. My final words to you is that for anybody who questions your so-called patriotism, and especially if you didn't wear a uniform, there are many ways to defend a society. Every one of us in our own way does, I honestly believe, the best that we possibly can do to defend our society. We're all defenders, and every one of us, including me when it comes to this particular conflict is a conscientious objector. I want to thank all of you for having come out tonight. Keep the faith. It's going to be a long struggle. Okay? Good health, safe travels, and may each of you find the happiness that you deserve. Thank you.
Sure that everyone can sense tremendous courage that's up here in this little row of people here. Our next veteran is Brandy Mitchell. She's from Bellingham. She was in the Navy. She was in the Mediterranean on the USS Puget Sound from 93 to 95. And then from 96 to 97, she was a hospital corpsman on the Kitty Hawk, called an AVT, in Desert Storm. And so she was in Desert Storm and Desert Shield. So, you know, a corpsman, well, she'll tell you, but it's working in the medical field. And it is my great honor to welcome and introduce a very courageous lady, Brandy Mitchell.
Hello, my name is Brandy Mitchell, and I joined the Navy back in 93, and I resigned in 97. Yeah, 97. Excuse me, 98. Sorry. And I was taking care of many people during that time. When I went to Washington, I joined the squadron at that time, and we went to the Gulf. We were there for 6 months. 6 to 8 months. Oh, and then we began to notice that people were sick in my particular ship. I'm sorry. So I became ill myself, and we went to Bragan, and they and also went to Saudi Arabia. We went to two individual countries at that time. Syria, we also went to the crewmen on the ship when they came back after going to the countries, they all became ill. About 2/3 of the crewmen became ill at that time. The main people on the ship at that time, and I was on an aircraft carrier. I took care of the individuals who were sick at that time. And I also became ill with meningitis. I infected that from some of the individuals on board. And from that illness, I began to lose my hearing. It was because we were in contact with biological and chemical warfare at that time. And it was in that area that the elements were to be found. So we came in contact with health issues. From that time on, after the Gulf War, people today become ill because of those chemicals that are still in the area. It's on the animals as well in the area. Now, for 2 years after that, I resigned from the Navy, and I became deaf. And that was from the illness that I contracted at that time. I was part of the military. The doctors, when I went to the VA hospital, they asked me many questions as opposed to what happened, whether I can hear or not. I continued to tell them I didn't know that why I couldn't hear, that you were the doctors who needed to tell me why I couldn't hear. For 2 or 3 months now, I've become worse with my health. It's declined further. I've had many migraines for these last few months. I still experience those headaches. I take various medications, there's a numerous amount, and there are different ones for different reasons. I must use my medication for pain control because of the poisons that cause the illnesses and the pains in my body. I feel pain in my bones. There are pains I experienced when I was growing up, but these are different kinds of pain than the growing pains you experience. These seem to be much deeper. The right hand and bones, it seems like. I still can sure what else to say, but having a hard time getting help from the VA hospitals. They tell me that there's nothing wrong with me. I go there, and I do spinal analysis, and I do CT analysis, as well as blood work. I use x-rays, hearing tests, and they tell me that there's nothing wrong with me, or that all the tests conflict with one another. So I really don't know what's wrong. But I know my health is continuing to deteriorate. And I can't explain that to the doctors when I go to the VA. So now, when I go and see the doctors in Millennium, I see the doctors that are professionals, in neurology, for me, it's a specialist I see. It's hard for me to find that time to leave from home and to see them. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. Our last veteran speaker is Indira Ray Chaudhary. She's a mom of two boys, a former JAG officer, military attorney in the Gulf War. She's a defender of the Constitution while it's still here. Going to stay if she has anything to say about it, I'll tell you. Active duty 1987 to 1992, she waited 10 years for her VA claim to be processed. She is a member of the National Lawyers Guild, a board member of the National Police Accountability Project, member of the ACLU, Amnesty International. And she practices law in Bellingham. Indira.
Someone I greatly admire once said, "I bring you a new commandment, to love your brother as I have loved you." Someone else I admire said, "A man cannot be a true believer until he wants for his brother what he wants for himself." Those two men were Jesus Christ and the Prophet Muhammad. This administration that we have here is one of the most hateful and deceitful administrations in the history of this country, and they are bringing this country down. Recently, in the budget hearings, it's proposed that the VA budget be cut by $23 billion. B. Billion dollars. The Medicaid budget is being cut by $93 billion. This is being done while young men are naively out there thinking that they're doing something for this country. This is being done when 72 million Americans are without health insurance. This is being done when this country's economy is at one of the worst points it's ever been. And at the same time, we're sending $5 million a day to support the state of Israel that stands in violation of more Security Council resolutions than any other country on earth. We are committing genocide in Palestine, and it's our money that's paying for that. Just this morning, an international solidarity movement activist had his cheek blown off by an Israeli Defense Force soldier. And the Israeli Defense Force soldier that ran over Rachel Corrie is back on duty with no punishment. This is what this administration is paying for. And this administration is looking at a situation in also which there's a 250,000 homeless veterans. This administration is looking at a situation where people like myself waited 10 years or more to get their claims. I waited 10 years for my claim. I had a brain tumor that I mysteriously developed during active duty. I wasn't treated for it by the military, and then I developed hepatitis C, and hepatitis C is the leading cause of liver transplants. They project that hepatitis C is going to, the deaths from that is going to exceed the deaths from AIDS in 2010. And I don't have any risk factors for hepatitis C. I'm not a drug user, nothing. I looked in my military folder, and lo and behold, it said that I was exposed to hepatitis. And they did not bother to tell me. And they did not pay for my therapy. My drugs cost $18,000. I had to pay for them out of my own pocket while I waited for this country to process my claim for 10 years. And it wasn't until Senator John McCain intervened that anything was done. And if it were up to them, I would have been dead. I would have been one of those 250,000 homeless veterans. And on top of that, right now it's taking them years to process claims. There's over 500,000 backlog VA claims. And at that point, while we're sending young men and women over there, he is cutting the VA budget by $25 billion so he can pay for the rich to get richer. And while he and his cronies are reaping rewards from the oil companies, from Halliburton, and all of that, and I'm outraged, and I hope you're outraged. And the war isn't just going on out there. We're losing our credibility. We are losing our credibility. We cannot say that we're for justice and democracy while people in Palestine are being oppressed, while people are being jailed and tortured without trial and murdered, and where they're being deprived of their homeland, where they're being deprived of the right to exist. We cannot lift our heads and be taken seriously when we do that. The rest of the world knows that we are the ones who supplied Saddam Hussein with any weapons of mass destruction, with any chemical weapons that he ever had. The United States supplied those to him when we wanted him to fight our war by proxy in Iran, against Iran, after we assassinated Mossadegh because he nationalized the oil company and then supported the Shah of Iran, who killed one out of 25 of his countrymen. And when the backlash and the blowback hit, we sent chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein. And now we're sending our young men and women to die to clean up the mess that we created. And the blowback from this war, you have no idea, but there's going to be a huge blowback. And the president of this country is willing to send this country to hell. He is willing to defy every Geneva Convention. He is willing to breach every international law. He is willing to have the United States despised around the globe. And make no mistake, that's what's happened. in order to carry out this agenda. And at the same time this war is being waged overseas, he's carrying out a war right here in your backyard. I'm sure most of you have heard of the USA Patriot Act. The Patriot Act that has resulted in 1,000 or more disappeared in the United States, where people of Islamic beliefs from countries throughout the world have been rounded up and detained without charge, where Ashcroft refuses to release the names or the identity or the locations of these people. We are in a mode where there is secret evidence and there are secret trials, where people are being detained as enemy combatants without the right to a lawyer, without the right to challenge that, and that doesn't stop. It doesn't stop there, because now we've got Patriot Act 2, the Domestic Security Act, where United States citizens can be stripped of their citizenship because John Ashcroft thinks that you're supporting in some kind of way some organization that he unilaterally deems is unacceptable. And that can be done retroactively. You can support someone in some kind of way, give a donation, and after that, they can declare, oh, by the way, now we don't like that group, they're a terrorist organization, and you've just lost your citizenship. That's what he is proposing. Right now, they are also proposing that they can search anybody, wiretap anybody, look at anybody's information for 15 days without any kind of notice or review. Right now, what they're doing is they're using administrative subpoenas and search warrants and looking through your financial information, looking at every book you read, looking at everything you write on the internet, and these are sealed and these are not subject to judicial review. I'm an attorney also, and I'm watching the Constitution fall apart before my very eyes. You are losing your freedom. Everything that we purport to stand for and everything we claim we don't like, detentions without cause, no representation, torture, we're doing it. We are doing it. We are the war criminals. The United States is dying, in my estimation. The Constitution is dying. And I thank you for showing up, because we need each and every one of you, each and every one of you, to be a warrior, to fight, to protect this country. This country is dying, and it's not from Saddam Hussein. It's from George Bush, John Ashcroft, Mr. Wolfowitz, Pearl, Cheney, Rumsfeld. And what I'd like to ask each and every one of you to do is stay educated. Obviously you are, or you wouldn't be here, but there's a lot of people out there that aren't. I'm asking each and every one of you to go and look at what JINSA is. I'm asking each and every one of you to go and look at the general, the retired general that they propose head Iraq. The retired general that was a board member or supporter of JINSA, an extremist Zionist organization that supports Ariel Sharon. That is the person that they are proposing heads Iraq.
How do you spell JINSA?
J-I-N-S-A. And this is a part of the program for a new American century, PNAC. I hope you've all heard of it. It's an insidious and horrible document that was put together 12 years ago and signed by Wolfowitz, Cheney, and Rumsfeld and some other people. And that sets out a program of imperialistic domination and calls for the unilateral invasion of Iraq. And it is being carried out now by the same people who authored it. It's called PNAC. Put a Google search and put PNAC, Program for a New American Century. And along with this general, by the way, Cheney and Wolfowitz, Pearl, they're all supporters of JINSA, all of them. along with this, Mr. Woosley, who used to be head of the CIA, he's also going to participate. He's also a friend of Ariel Sharon. If you think that's going to be accepted in the Middle East, you're wrong. It's not. That is the kind of thing that's going on. And Mr. Woosley said one day, I heard him on television, one thing he said, the one truth that came out of his mouth was, the United States doesn't support democracies abroad. They're too hard to control. So what I would ask you, I appreciate all of you coming, and I appreciate your support, and I know all the veterans appreciate your support, but this country needs your support, no matter what the detractors say. So I ask you to educate yourself, look at what's going on, and do something about it, because pretty soon it's going to be too late. Thank you.
You've been listening to excerpts from a forum, Vets Speak Out, Depleted Uranium, and Gulf War Syndrome, held in April in Seattle. Thanks to Mike McCormick of Mind Over Matters Radio for that tape. We'll conclude the program with an article by Chris White that was published in the January 6th edition of the Counterpunch newsletter. It's called Deceptions in Military Recruiting. An Ex-Insider Speaks Out. The points in this essay concerning the dark side of military recruiting largely inform my decision to work incessantly to dissuade young men and women from enlisting. My primary audience is every U.S. citizen because it is necessary that as many people as possible understand the manipulation used by the military to lure young Americans. It is important to question the notion that the all-volunteer military is truly made up of volunteers. If one is lied to about a profession by the people who convince them to join that profession, then is the person who was lied to a volunteer in the clearest sense of the word? My research has led me to forsake the ideology of once a Marine, always a Marine, that imposes on us to refer to ourselves as former Marines and never ex-Marines. I condemn my past Marine identity, and therefore I proudly call myself an ex-Marine who is against any offensive use of the U.S. military. I am not against the men and women serving in the military per se. I am against the way in which they are used by the government to promote the interests of its richest constituents. My doctoral research on U.S. foreign policy also convinces me that when viewed through the lens of the deceptive process of military recruiting, our actions abroad are further exposed as corruptly violent. Furthermore, I have learned that rarely has our military been used for national defense in its 228-year history. We can remember the War of 1812 and World War II as possibly the only national defense wars, but mostly poor young men and women, for the causes of defending the interests of the rich and the politicians, have fought hundreds of other engagements both here and abroad. Every service member contributes their share, which is why I work hard to dissuade anyone from joining the military. The Bush administration's justification for waging war on Iraq is permeated by a fleet of hypocritical holes. From the absence of proof, to the double standards, to the erasure of history in public discussions, to all of the other deceitful practices that support the military-industrial complex, it is clear that those who favor peace are up against a simultaneously powerful and tenuous force. The force is powerful because it has monetary and physical strength as well as the media to maintain power over the masses. Yet the grip of the warmongers is tenuous as long as there are those who will speak out to expose the hypocrisy and lies that legitimize their rule in the first place. Military recruiters are the first line of offense in this machinery that serves the interests of the power elite at the expense of the less fortunate. Recruiters creep into the civilian world touting slogans to make an otherwise dismal job seem appealing. Their training is largely oriented toward marketing and sales techniques. On the first day at recruiting school, A recruiter friend of mine was told to come up with a gimmick for selling a pen. What business does the military have teaching recruiters to sell anything? Are the lives of America's youth just another commodity for the government to exploit? If the war is justified, then why do recruiters have to exist at all? Why do they even have to sell the military to young people? Why do they have to use manipulative sales techniques to convince young, uneducated minds to carry out the dirty work of war? As an assistant recruiter, I witnessed firsthand how recruiters manipulate the poor and young into fighting for the rich. First, recruiters have every incentive to be dishonest. Speaking for the Marine Corps only, recruiters have monthly quotas, and once filled, they can slack off for the rest of the month. However, the more people they sign up, the better their chances for promotion. Therefore, the incentive for dishonesty is high indeed. Recruiters lie about college benefits, duty station assignments, veterans' benefits, and countless other aspects of the military in order to convince their clients to sign. Once you are in boot camp, it is too late to change anything. How do they lie about college benefits? They fail to tell you that you must pay $1,200 in your first year of the military in order to get the GI Bill, which is quite a chunk of money when your salary is only $700 a month. You will be lucky if you get your monthly GI Bill check in your first 3 months of college anyway, as the bureaucracy is so inept that you had better hope to have enough money saved up before you arrive. Another point recruiters leave out is that most students who are independent and over 25, civilians and veterans alike, are eligible for enormous amounts of financial aid anyway. That is, unless you already receive the GI Bill. Wait a minute, back up. So if I earn the GI Bill for serving, quote, my country, then I may not be eligible for any financial aid? Yep. Ask any veteran over 25 working in college, and they will tell you that the financial aid office determines one's eligibility for grants and fellowships, free money, according to one's income, then deletes one's income from the amount of aid one is eligible for. Therefore, if one were eligible for $9,000 in grants, but received $9,000 from the GI Bill, well, one gets no grants. One can get loans, though, all the loans one desires. This may seem like a petty argument, but remember, recruiters use the GI Bill to lure civilians into joining the military. So if the GI Bill is not necessarily a benefit, then why should one join for the college money? How do recruiters lie about duty station assignments? Recruiters tell potential reservists that they can go to college and serve 1 weekend a month, with very little chance of being called back to active duty. However, the current administration wants to call up to 300,000 reservists to the Gulf alone. I can further illustrate this with the story of my neighbor's daughter who had considered joining the National Guard. As an incentive to get her to sign, her recruiter told her she would be stationed in Kansas, but luckily I persuaded her not to join. Her friend was not so lucky. Shortly after joining the Guard, he was called to active duty and sent to Bosnia for 2 years. Thousands of National Guard and other reservists have been called back to active duty since 9/11, and thousands more still will be called to go to Iraq. How do recruiters deceive us about veterans' benefits? I can use VA medical facilities if I want to wait 5 months for an appointment, but my wife cannot use them, at least in Kansas. We are both veterans, but I am 30% disabled and she is not at all. Of course, who would want to use the VA hospital in Kansas City anyway? According to an AP report in March 2002, the infestation of mice, maggots, and flies in the years leading up to 2001 created such a scandal as to pressure VA Secretary Anthony Principe to remove the director and deputy director for the regional network, which includes Missouri, Kansas, and Southern Illinois. The janitorial staff did not touch the food storage areas or cafeteria for a year, and maggots had nested in two of the comatose patient's noses. This is not necessarily the fault of the VA, because the federal government decides how much money will be allotted to our disabled veterans. Ron Kovic exposed the horrible conditions of the VA hospitals during the Vietnam era in his book, Born on the 4th of July. As a wounded Vietnam veteran, Kovic was outraged at the outdated equipment, underqualified and uncaring staffs, and unsanitary conditions that disabled veterans were forced to endure. Therefore, not much has changed since the 1970s, and any hope of future change is diminished by W's slashing of the VA's health care budget by $275 million in 2002, and further cuts all around to the VA. Of course, recruiters never mention this in their deceit-filled speeches about the benefits of the military, which is why more veterans need to speak to high school students and parents about the realities of military life. Although the lies are bad enough, interactions with recruiters can be hazardous to one's health. One poolee, person waiting to go to boot camp who is already enlisted, wrote me that my first essay had helped him to decide to leave the Marines. The recruiter lied to the poolee by saying that it was too late, that he had already enlisted and therefore he was obliged for the next 4 years. During my recruiting days, I learned that any poolee can get out before boot camp, and after several more emails, the poolee told me that he had finally received his discharge after pushing the matter a little more. His recruiter responded to him with a physical threat by saying, "If I was in front of you right now, I'd knock you out." Great example of the quality of leadership instilled by military service. My recruiter in 1994 was a Marine sniper who had served in El Salvador and Somalia, among other places. He actually admitted to me with excitement that he had killed non-combatants in Somalia with a 50-caliber sniper rifle, a weapon only to be used on vehicles, and that he had taken pictures of his victims afterward. His story was semi-confirmed for me 7 years later. Once I read Scott Peterson's Me Against My Brother. Peterson wrote, "The snipers killed more than 14 Somalis, some of them children who were found later to have a toy pistol or nothing." UN spokesperson George Bennett later told Peterson, "They were shooting at anything by the time they left." And this statement only further confirms my recruiter's story. Unfortunately, I too am guilty of following an unlawful order from that same recruiter, but of a much lesser magnitude. While assisting him for 2 weeks just after I graduated from boot camp, part of my job was to make poolees lose weight before they shipped out. One poolee was still 12 pounds overweight the day before boot camp, so naturally my recruiter ordered me to force the poolee to eat an entire box of Ex-Lax, after which I had to make him do calisthenics until he lost the 12 pounds. Needless to say, he was admitted to boot camp the next day, but I am still ashamed that I made him do that. The business of recruiting is dark indeed. Recruiters now have even more access to the young minds of America, with the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001 and the National Defense Authorization Act of fiscal year 2002. These acts require every high school receiving federal education funds to hand over the names, addresses, and phone numbers of every junior and senior to local recruiters upon request. That means that even 15-year-olds with no idea whatsoever about the real world, let alone the military, are now vulnerable to the manipulation and deception of recruiters in their own homes. If a school refuses to hand the information over, the Department of Defense steps in and pressures the school, after which federal funding may be withdrawn. According to Secretary of Education Rod Page and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, the acts give students more access to college. but we need to ask why it is that the government does not offer any alternatives to the military for unskilled high school graduates that wish to go to college but are unqualified for college. Our commander-in-chief himself took the opportunity to join the military, then took a Bush prerogative and failed to return to his duty station for a year and a half. Of course, he did not have to serve the prison sentences that others who left for that long did. Nevertheless, it makes perfect sense. After all, the president is not any different from half of Americans who support our war on Iraq. While over 50% support an invasion, approximately 1% serves in the military. Therefore, only 1% of us is willing to fight a battle that over 50% of us favor, which makes it much more palatable to start a war. As long as the majority faces no direct military consequences, I guess anything, including deceptive measures in recruiting, goes. Thus, the cycle of historical amnesia is allowed to continue, and future U.S. military action will surely bring about more 9/11s. And that was Deceptions in Military Recruiting, an Ex-Insider Speaks Out by Chris White. Chris White is an ex-Marine infantryman with experience as a recruiter assistant. He's currently working on his doctorate in history at the University of Kansas, Lawrence. He served from 1994 through 1998 in Diego Garcia, Camp Pendleton, California, Okinawa, Japan, and Doha, Qatar. He is also a member of Veterans for Peace. And I was reading from an article called Deceptions in Military Recruiting, an Ex-Insider Speaks Out by Chris White, that was published in the January 6th edition of the Counterpunch newsletter. www.counterpunch.org. Music by Seize the Day was featured in tonight's edition of Unwelcome Guests. For more info on this program or to view our archive of previous shows, please visit our website at www.unwelcomeguests.org. And if you're listening on 88.1 in Ithaca and appreciate being able to do so, please help pay for the transmitter you're listening to. To find out how, visit www.ithacaradio.org. And be sure to tune in Mondays at 6:30 p.m. for the Ithaca Radio Hour. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thanks for listening.
Hired by the rich man to catch me. Catch me napping one day and they'll kill me. Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle.